Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
With the self-appointed revolutionary of reason, Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
Good morning, welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We are shuddering towards the end of yet another astonishing week, it has to be said, in the big bad world of post-COVID Britain. Yes, I'm calling it post-COVID Britain because we are in post-COVID Britain. I don't care what anybody says. It's very clear that we have moved on. A lot of people have forgotten about it altogether. And apologies to anyone who is now currently saying to me, oh, well, it's still a very dangerous virus. Well, it's a virus, and it has been very dangerous, and it has had its moments, and it has caused an awful lot of heartache for people. But I think we are now, safe to say, in January, Friday the 21st, I think we can say we are out of it. Here at Talk Radio, which is, of course, the home of common sense, we've been expecting something to happen, of course. But it hasn't, has it? We've been expecting someone to show some vim and vigour, but nobody has. We've been expecting a bit of leadership, but there hasn't been any of that either. Instead, we've seen the great disappearing act from Boris Johnson and the Cabinet just keep pushing everything into the long grass and hope it all goes away. Well, it's not going to go away. We're not going to let it go away. But as much as Number 10 Downing Street, we'd like us to forget about the investigation which is going on, which is looking further and further away from Ms. Gray. And when it does come, it won't be worth a fag end, it looks like. Never mind the parties. Never mind the disquiet in the ranks. Never mind all the blackmail that seems to be going on the backbenches. Never mind the policies. Just feel the wind. That seems to be the message coming out of Downing Street. Are you buying it? Is Boris now just going to stay in power because nobody can be bothered to get him out of it? That's ridiculous, isn't it? 0344 499 1000. Meanwhile, the big stories are actually going to matter. Prices are soaring to ludicrous heights. I'm hearing stories of people whose energy bills started at £200 a month are now £600 a month. It can't go on. People need to be told what is going to be happening to them. NHS waiting lists continue to get longer. Nobody's doing anything about that. And what's the Foreign Secretary doing in Australia? There's a war pending in Russia on the Ukrainian border, and Liz Truss has gone to Australia. What, is she playing in the open? Is she filling in for Andy Murray now that he's been knocked out? I mean, what's going on? To make sense of it all this morning, we've brought the only man in who can make sense of it all, Richard Tice. He'll be here very, very shortly. You'll hear from him, 0344 499 1000. We'll be talking about the misery of going back to work, because you've never seen so many unhappy-looking people as I came into work this morning. They've all had to go back to the office. What? What do you mean I can't work from home anymore? It's an outrage. Absolutely ridiculous. Also, of course, we're going to be talking to Brendan O'Neill. We're going to be finding out about the NHS backlog. We're going to find out, well, about why energy bills are rising and what we can do about it. And also, of course, we've got some news on Adele, who apparently, tragically, has had to cancel her £500,000 a night show at Vegas because she's been destroyed by COVID, apparently. I don't know why. And Meatloaf. Poor Meatloaf is no longer with us. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio show on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Let's say a very good morning to Richard Tice. Nice to see you.
A very good morning to you, Mike. It's hard to know whether to be cheery at the end of the week or whether to be a bit gloomy and frustrated.
Well, I was very, I was very cheery when the restrictions all got lifted, even knowing that it was all being done as a kind of a sideshow to the Boris Johnson act of, you know, well, let's just do this and see if everybody likes it. Which apparently seems to have worked, unfortunately.
Well, it's worked to a degree. And yes, it is good news that all the restrictions have been lifted. Credit where credit's due. Unless you're one of the unfortunate few thousand children who are still in a school up and down the country where the head teachers or the unions are still insisting, despite a complete lack of any credible evidence to the contrary, they're still insisting that children remain muzzled and masked and therefore unable to learn as well and to integrate as well. Yes. And I think that's an absolute disgrace.
That is an absolute disgrace. And I think all parents should actually take a stand and say, well, do you know what? I'm going to make my child exempt. They don't want to wear a mask anymore.
That's right.
But people don't want to seemingly do that, though.
No, although I was heartened a couple of weeks ago when actually we were hearing about whole schools, whole year groups that were rebelling against masks. And I think that was a key moment. And I think the other key moment, early at the beginning of this week, was the news that the Us For Them group were going to sue the government with regard to masks in children. And I think that actually really helped stop this nonsense.
Well, I was talking to Francis Hall yesterday about the whole business of suing, because so many people were punished, so many people were fined, so many people had terrible things happen to them as a result of the COVID regulations that were brought in by the government, which the government clearly didn't seem to care about adhering to themselves.
It's a really interesting point, and you touched on it in your intro. In a sense, it's almost like government has stopped. Or is the government now being led by Sue Gray? I'm not quite clear. Everything seems to have pressed the pause button until she reports, and who knows what she will say and when that will be.
Well, I'm pretty sure she's not going to say anything very interesting. I'm pretty sure it's all going to be whitewashed.
Yeah, but we know that there were massive breaches of the rules in number 10. We know that people who did that elsewhere in the country were fined loads of money. So are all those people in number 10 going to be fined? Or, possibly, should all of the other fines, tens of thousands of fines imposed across the whole country, actually, should they be basically reimbursed on the basis that if our leaders didn't believe what they were telling us, then frankly all the fines should be scrapped?
Well, Francis said something very interesting, that the fines themselves were never actually lawful, and that if you challenged them and forced somebody to take you to court, that could give you a very different outcome. And he quoted one case where somebody who had been fined £10,000 went to court, and the judge agreed that the fine should be applied, but only applied a £200 fine, because he said £10,000 was disproportionate and ridiculous.
Completely ridiculous. And maybe everybody at number 10 should be fined £10,000.
Just for being crap.
Just for being rubbish.
Yeah.
And for not showing proper leadership and not setting a proper example. Mm. And then see what happens. Yeah. And I suspect you might find that actually all the fines get
But you said something interesting to me just before we started the show, because I've been looking at this blackmailing story and thinking to myself, you know, yes, of course, it's a bit like House of Cards. Michael Fabrikant was on the other day saying, well, of course, it would be ridiculous to consider that threats like this would be made. I mean, we all know those threats are made. However, I just think this is a bit of a distraction, isn't it?
Look, I think the reality is that you can think it's a bit of a distraction. Look, this has gone on since time began in the House of Commons. That doesn't mean that it's been acceptable. And I actually think all credit to William Ragg for actually blowing the lid on what is unacceptable behaviour from the whips. And I think I admire MPs, if they don't like a suggestion or a proposed vote from the government, if they've got the courage and the principle and the integrity to say, I'm going to vote against it, it's wrong, it's not in my constituents' benefit interests, then that should be respected. And the idea that you can suddenly say, well, I'm going to pull a few strings and that primary school's not going to get a couple of new classrooms or not going to be rebuilt, I actually think is disgraceful.
I mean,
if that goes on.
But that's Wakeford's claim. He's known here at the Independent Republic as Weasel Wakeford.
Yeah.
The man who wants to have a by-election except for when he decides to move to the Labour Party and doesn't.
And that is appalling. But I think it's the principle. And I think what William Ragg has blown the lid on is just how far that is taken. And, you know, yes, you can say, well, you know, MPs have just got to basically just sort of man up and take it. But no, I think what we're hearing is actually it's a bit more than that. There's a balance between a negotiation and a bit of leverage between two sides of a debate, of an argument, and actually employing what broadly amounts to a form of blackmail stroke corruption where you're really saying you're not going to. It's like what they call in America, they call it sort of pork barrel politics.
Nah. But this, again, surely is all about saving Boris Johnson. And all of the things that are now happening in Parliament, this is why, for me, he still has to go. It's all about him. It's not about what's good for the country. It's not about whether we should be making particular parts of policy work. It's all about, what can I do to make myself even more stable? What can I do to make myself more reliable? What can I do to keep myself in the job?
Of course, they threw out a bunch of policies, sort of red meat, to try and impress the Daily Mail and the Telegraph, which is, in a sense it did. And both those newspapers have sort of panicked. They thought, we've overreached.
Yes, I mean,
Boris.
I don't wish to in any way cast aspersions on anybody's family or anybody's health, but, you know, they put it out there and then they complain about the fact that there's intrusion. That story about how, you know, one of his children was very ill with COVID. was absolute and utter nonsense. You know, I'm not saying it didn't happen, but the way it was written, the way that the sort of tears were flowing over the page, the way that sympathy was being garnered, you know, she was very ill. Well, really? You know, well, join the club. Lots of people have got kids who are very ill. Don't put that out there now and try and get sympathy.
Yeah, no, I think the thing with the Prime Minister is that he is on the ropes. He's right on the edge. In a sense, Wakeford's defection probably did actually save him on the day.
Yeah.
And
do you think he's a double agent, old Wakeford? You know, he's gone over to Labour just to
It's hard
it up
to know, but I think that... what do I think? Really, he is waiting for the Grey Report. We shouldn't be surprised if the Grey Report looks bad. It's not impossible that actually the Prime Minister goes before he's pushed. And that's something to just to think about.
Yes.
Wasn't it extraordinary how, despite on Tuesday having sort of appeared so downcast and almost in tears when he was talking to Beth Rigby, yeah, the following day, actually, he came out and gave a blistering performance, yeah, in the House of Commons. It was almost as though the weight of the world had lifted off his shoulders.
What, you mean he wasn't really in tears? He was just pretending to be in tears?
I don't know, but it was an extraordinary difference. Quite bizarre.
Yeah.
But he is in deep trouble. It's a matter of when, not if.
Right.
And I think that...
But I don't think he believes that. I think he thinks that this has all gone away. I think he genuinely, like all kind of people who believe themselves to be untouchable.
I think he knows that he's in deep trouble.
Mm.
And he's a clever man. He knows that, frankly, he hasn't got many friends in the House of Commons. He's never been a sort of someone to, you know, to get on well with lots of other parliamentarians. Mm. And I think that's going to come back and bite him. It's just a matter of when, not if.
Yes, but, I mean, has he quelled the back benches, I suppose, is one question. I mean, David Davis, again,
that was an
incredible
yes.
intervention in Prime Minister's Questions. I was here watching it live on this show, and I was like, blimey, that's amazing. But then he was kind of ridiculed for doing it and made to look like he had overreached and overstretched and had hit the wrong target at the wrong time.
I'm told that he made that decision. He hadn't told anybody he was going to do that. And he only finally made that decision as he walked into the chamber,
right,
is my understanding.
And
that,
presumably
that may
after
be wrong.
Watching the performance that Boris had given, well, which for me was hopeless.
That's interesting.
You know?
I think relative to Tuesday, I think Boris came out fighting on Wednesday at PMQs.
I know a lot of people said that.
But David Davis's intervention was really significant. In my view, it was like a Geoffrey Howe moment.
Mm.
It was really significant. And sure, lots of people have said, you know, he did the wrong thing. But he's a very senior, experienced MP.
And a pretty well-respected one as well.
And actually highly respected. And my sense is that we're in a pause mode. And we don't know when Sue Gray is going to report.
Well, we think it's next week, we're told.
She's got so many parties to report on and to investigate. Who knows?
But the longer it goes on, the less important that report is. And the less likely is that report to be in any way hard-hitting, I think.
That's possible, but equally, so many MPs have said they've got to wait for the report. I think a lot of people are just sort of sitting on the fence.
Mm.
And I think that if there's a lot of people who are looking for something in that report on which to make their final decision. And I think a lot of people actually want Boris out. And let's remember, of course, there are a huge number of Tory MPs that think they're going to stand for the leadership. I mean, if there is a leadership campaign, you would be looking at 15 to 20 candidates, probably throwing their hat in the ring. So I think some extraordinary things will happen. Yes, they might think there's a bit of a lull at the moment, and there's never a good time to have a change of leader, but there's a huge amount of anger out there. Who knows? For all we know, Putin might come to Boris's rescue, because if Putin invades Ukraine, then we're into a wholly different place, Mike. Wholly different
Absolutely.
Place.
Absolutely. But that's the other reason why you would ask the question, do you really want to have Boris Johnson, a man who has singularly taken us down all sorts of roads in the past and has proven to us that he is entirely interested in only one thing, and that's the preservation of Boris Johnson? Do you really want a guy like that in charge of a major international crisis?
Well, and then you've got Biden in the
Biden's
US.
Biden's even worse.
I mean, he was sort of caught saying, well, it depends on the nature of the invasion. If he does a bit, then we might respond this way. And if he does a bit more, I mean, I was just absolutely hopeless.
Well, he's terrified, isn't he, of doing anything overseas, because Trump taught him the lesson. Actually, people don't want to have American troops anywhere outside of America, because America has become incredibly isolationist.
Yeah, but of course, no one's talking about troops. What we're talking about here is the economic sanctions.
Mm.
And they need to be robust. They need to be massive. And Putin needs to know that if he does invade, then actually he would be cut off from the banking system.
No, but what I mean by troops on the ground is that America is a very simple country. You know that. I know that, right? It's not that they're not quite... They're just not very sophisticated when it comes to international relations. And people who live in America, even those who are quite well-educated, don't really understand the rest of the world, and they don't want anything to do with it. And they'd rather everybody just stayed in America and didn't go anywhere.
Yes, I mean, they can be quite isolationist, but equally, obviously, they have been... They've been essentially the global superpower since the Second World War, and they've played the role of the global policeman. But of course, that's changing, as we saw essentially from the Afghanistan moment when we talked about that. Yeah. But this is a really significant moment. I'm going to be talking about it on Sunday, because if Putin invades Ukraine, the direction of gas prices, commodity prices, you know, they could go up very sharply, very fast, and that could be really, really uncomfortable for all of us. And all of this for Putin is about the money. He knows he's literally got the continental Europe. I mean, he's got them by the short and curlies, because basically they import almost 50% of their gas needs from Russia. And Putin wants the Nord Stream 2 pipeline open. I mean, you look at the fracturing here. You've got Germany that didn't allow the UK to fly over its airspace to take the weapons to Ukraine. Why? Because they didn't want to upset Russia, because they want to make sure that Russia doesn't turn off the gas taps.
Yeah.
So you start to understand the leverage that Putin has got. And, you know, this is a really, really dangerous moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, we worry about the cost of living. We worry about inflation. I fear we haven't seen anything yet as to what could happen over the coming months.
I'm glad you brought that up, because we're going to talk about the energy crisis, which is what is going on out there. That's the big thing that's worrying everybody. It's the big thing that's going to make a big difference to people's wallets, the pound in your pocket. People are talking about a quadruple rise in what they were paying this time last year to what they're paying this year.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Richard Tice is here with me. We're talking about energy, Richard. I've got a great tweet here from Angela, because Rishi Sunak has talked about giving away some money, 500 quid, to the poorest families. Angela says, Rishi's £500 for the poorest regarding energy bills. Surely it's better to cut the green tax and the VAT to help everyone. This is another Rishi charm offensive, like he's eat out to help out. And look how that ended up. Taxpayers can't keep funding whims from the Treasury. It's a good point.
Look, it is a good point. And, I mean, it is awful what's happening to energy prices. Yeah. Everybody is seeing... thing letters land on their doormat through the letterbox with horrendous numbers, doubling, tripling. I mean, people just can't believe it. And it's all due to the government's failed energy policies for the last decade. And yes, I think that the environmental levies, which represent 25% of your electricity bill, the VAT on domestic fuel, that we can now cut thanks to Brexit, everybody in the Labour Party, thanks to Brexit, these things should go. But even then, I think we may end up with, if gas prices go up even higher, Mike, you could end up with an energy equivalent of furlough, because actually some of this will become completely unsustainable. And the government is being naive, thinking this is a short-term spike.
Because also
Putin wants this to be long-term.
You can't give money away to people who can't afford to pay their bills. I mean, that's a ludicrous idea, isn't it?
Well, it's a real problem.
Yeah.
But the point is that... The real issue here is that what's happening in the free market has failed here, because we're in almost like a warlike situation against Putin, and so anything that people could reasonably have predicted has now gone out the window. A bit like when we first locked down, you could never reasonably predict that.
No,
you couldn't predict that energy prices, that gas prices in the UK would go up by 3 or 4 times in 6 months.
Yeah.
And I think the simple response to that is it highlights how we've got to be self-reliant as a nation on our own energy. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of pounds worth of our own shale gas under our feet that's owned by all of us, Mike.
Yes.
All of your listeners, all of these great people who listen to Talk Radio and everybody, we own this shale gas.
Right.
Why would you leave the treasure a kilometre underground when you could actually bring it to the ground safely, happily, using new technology?
Well, the answer to that is simple, isn't it? It's the green lobbyists, the people like Zach Goldsmith and Carrie, formerly known as Simmons, Johnson, who says, oh, no, we can't be doing that.
Well, if they want to pay Angela's energy bill, then they're very welcome to.
Well, I wish they'd just get out of
frankly,
the way.
otherwise than actually we want this golden gas out of our ground that we own, because that actually, you could halve our gas prices in the UK if we used our own gas, as opposed to buying Putin's gas and Macron's electricity.
Well, you could reduce the cost altogether by simply slashing VAT and the ridiculous green subsidy.
That's 25%,
a quarter off the bill already.
But imagine if I did even more for you.
Yeah.
Imagine if I halved your gas bill. Because we're using our own gas that we all own. This is what's out there. Mm. I'm going to be talking about this again and again and again. I think it's an absolute disgrace what is going on, what these eco-zealots have done to the poorest in society.
But how have we allowed these people, and we're going to be talking to Net Zero Watch later on in the show, how have we allowed these kind of green millionaires to basically piggyback money off the government, get subsidies to run wind farms, get subsidies to run solar panel companies, get subsidies to kind of supposedly make our energy greener. And all that's happening is they're just getting richer and richer,
correct.
And we're getting stooped.
It's very simple. That they have lobbied and persuaded feeble cabinet ministers, weak leaders, who actually have been more interested in the vested interests of their mates as opposed to looking after the likes of Angela and millions and millions and millions of ordinary families up and down the country who are being utterly shafted by this
because
process.
Because everybody I've now started asking the question that nobody can answer. What actually is net zero? What does it mean?
I'll tell you what it means. It means impoverishment, fuel poverty, and sending our jobs and our money to China and Russia. And it is totally unacceptable, and it really winds me up. It's the thing that's infuriating me more than anything else now. Because once again, it's about the wealthy middle class, the metropolitan eco-zealots, who are impoverishing the lowest paid, the least well off, who do some of the most important jobs, the key worker
but everything
jobs
that
keep us fed.
Right. But everything that we see, switch on the BBC, switch on Sky, any kind of, you know, media company that you like apart from this one, and all you get is, well, of course, we all know that we have to reach net zero. And I'm throwing things at the TV at this point. I'm going, what do you mean? We all know we have to get to net zero. What does it even mean?
Well,
Nobody knows.
As I say, it means impoverishing millions of people, sending our jobs and money overseas when actually we could keep both jobs and money here.
Mm.
And, you know, we need to take them on this. And this is the big debate, the big campaign over the next couple of years. It all comes into this. And let me be absolutely clear. We're only at the foothills of the cost mountain of net zero. Just at the foothills.
Yeah.
You know, you think it's bad at the moment. It gets a whole bunch worse over the next 3 or 4 years. Unless we change it.
Yes, and this is what I keep saying to people about Boris Johnson. You know, forget about the parties, right? Forget about the hypocrisy. Forget about the COVID nonsense. Then think about the one policy that he pushed through while COVID was going on. And there's only one policy that he pushed through, only one thing that he was concentrating on, and that was COP26, the green agenda, and all of that rubbish about, you know, making us all the leader, the world leader in green economy.
And the knock-on consequences of that is that taxes go up and up and up, and people feel poorer and poorer and poorer.
Yeah.
And it's very bad news.
Yes, and make no mistake, I mean, I'm no fan of Keir Starmer, as anybody who listens to this show knows, and I'm certainly not batting for Keir Starmer, and I'm certainly not suggesting that he would do a better job, because he wouldn't. But what I do want to see is somebody in the Tory party coming forward to run it like a Conservative party, which there hasn't been doing for years.
Good luck with that. You could be waiting a very long time, I'm afraid, Mike, because that just ain't going to happen. If there's a change of leadership, which I think there will be, you will see no change of policy on the most important thing that affects the most people across this country, which is the cost of living ruined by the net zero target.
And of course,
we need to take
on. The one final thing I want to raise with you is the rather ludicrous sideshow, which is being sort of pushed by the likes of Adonis and Heseltine, which is that if we get rid of Boris, we can get rid of Brexit, which is so ludicrous, I don't really even want to talk about it. But tell us what you make of that.
Look, it's hysterically ridiculous. Yeah. You can understand why they're saying it, but it's a nonsense. But here's the thing. Watch the weasel words of the Labour Party, because they all say, we've no plans.
Right.
To rejoin the EU.
Those plans.
That's today.
Right.
That means that tomorrow their plans are going to change, and all of a sudden they're going to say, oh, we might rejoin the single market and the customs union as a starter for 10.
Mm.
We will call them out on that. They won't give a cast iron guarantee that they accept the vote of the British people. And I think they'll be found out on that.
I think so. Richard Tice keeping them honest. Sunday, 10 o'clock.
Sunday, we've got a lot on. We're going to be talking about Ukraine, the impact on gas prices. I'm also going to be talking about the great furlough ripoff.
Yes.
Because some companies...
Why have they written off all this money?
Well, hang on. Some companies behave very well. And when things weren't too bad, they've actually given furlough money back that they used to protect jobs. But other companies, and I'm going to get after them on Sunday, have banked tens of millions of pounds, in one case, £100 million, when actually they're still making huge profits. Mm. I'm going to be talking about that. I'm also going to be talking about this outrage that the Home Office has now decided that it's not going to release daily numbers of illegal crossings.
Yeah, they're going to do it. That's a good way of keeping it quiet.
Yeah, well, but you can see exactly what's happening here. They know that the numbers are going to be at least double last year, possibly treble, and they want to try and reduce the quantity of embarrassment. Mm. That's why they brought the Navy in, because they can basically
put it down as a national secret.
They can bring them in, and they'll be able to try and cover up. It'll be harder to see them coming off the Navy boats. That's what I think is going on. But, of course, that's one of the reasons the numbers will go up, because the vile smugglers will be able to say to people, it's safer than ever.
Yeah.
Because guess what? The Navy are going to pick you up halfway across.
And they're not going to even count how many of you there are. One final thing. I never had you down as a Meatloaf fan, but you looked a bit sad this morning when you came in.
I was very sad because, actually, yes, believe it or not, in my teenage years at school, I loved Meatloaf.
Did you?
I loved Bad Out of Hell.
Great album.
I was briefly... amazing album. And yes, I was a headbanger.
Were you?
I was a headbanger as a teenager. I need to clarify that.
We need to find pictures. Anybody else out there who knew Mr. Tice when he was a young man? I, of course, am doing my Meatloaf impression even as we speak. But that was before he lost weight. This is, of course, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Richard, thanks very much indeed. We'll see you at 10 o'clock on Sunday.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Let's talk to Brendan O'Neill, Chief Political Writer at Spiked, of course. Because, Brendan, I've got a question for you. Where's Chris Whitty?
Well, as long as he stays off the TV screens, I don't particularly mind where he is. I think the points you make about where has Sage gone are very good ones, because they ran our lives for a long time. They were in charge of the country, as far as I could tell, and they were giving instruction to the people we elected and telling them to shut us all down. So if these so-called experts disappear with their scaremongering and their hysterical models, then I think that's a good thing for the nation.
Yes, I think it is. However, I would like, as ever, to know how much we've paid them. People have asked me over the course of the last few months, Brendan, how do these people from Sage get appointed? You know, most of them seem to be attached to Imperial College or the London School of Tropical Medicine or something like that. But I'd like, I mean, I know many of them are not paid because they've got other jobs, but certainly the Chief Medical Officer is a government job, as was all of his deputies. And I just think we should be told. It seems to me to be a habit in government now where if you don't tell anybody anything, they'll just never find out and they'll go away.
Yeah, well, that was one of the problems with these people. There was so little accountability. And the people who run the country are supposed to be accountable to us. That's how a democracy works. And we lived under the boot of an expert class over the past 2 years who we never voted for, we never elected. There were no mechanisms for us to hold them accountable. We don't know what they get paid. We don't know what they're thinking. We don't know what they're going to come up with next. We were really beholden to that section of society without having any democratic say-so over the policies they were coming up with. Mm. So that lack of accountability during the lockdown era, that was one of the key problems.
Yes, and I've noticed that some of the kind of slightly more lockdown-tastic scientists who were not actually in Sage, but there's that woman up in Edinburgh, wrote a piece of The Guardian the other day, talking about how, well, now that we've removed the fangs from COVID, we can approach it in a different way. And I read the piece and I was astonished at how kind of two-faced she'd become, talking about how, oh, well, of course, now we should now look at the economy. We should now look at the after effects of lockdown and why lockdown was bad in certain ways. Well, they never said any of that while lockdown was being ordered, did they?
Absolutely not. And I think we're going to witness a real reverse ferret over the next few months. I think a lot of the people who supported the first lockdown, which was the most severe, and subsequent lockdowns as well, I think they're going to start backtracking on just how enthusiastically they supported those lockdowns. They didn't raise questions at the time about the extraordinarily stupid rules we had to live under, playgrounds being locked up, yellow tape being put on park benches, people being swept out of parks for no reason whatsoever, people being, you know, drones being used to monitor dog walkers in the Lake District. And of course, the far worse side of it, people being left to die alone, dementia sufferers being deprived of visits from loved ones, which can help to keep dementia sufferers alive and healthy. All of those tyrannical things that were done, none of these people raised questions at the time. And in fact, what they said to those of us who did raise questions is that we were reckless and dangerous and we wanted people to die. So they actively clamped down on discussion. And I think we can't let them revise history and revise the role that they played.
No, absolutely not. And I think more important than that even, and I was talking to Francis Hoare about this the other day, you know, we have to ensure that this never happens again, because the ease with which the government was able to kind of enact all sorts of regulations and enact all sorts of rules without even discussing them in Parliament first and telling the police what they had to do, I was finding that incredibly overbearing and frankly untenable, and it should never happen again.
Absolutely, it must never happen again. And I would be surprised if it was possible to have a lockdown again, because people are increasingly sceptical that we need those kinds of extreme measures. You know, the Omicron variant shows that people are more than capable of taking voluntaristic measures. You know, lots of people voluntarily limited their social life and limited their going outdoors in the run-up to Christmas, because they didn't want to catch Omicron, they didn't want to spread it to people. You know, we can be trusted to take sensible precautions when we have to do that. We don't need these severe restrictions and these criminal laws to force us to behave in a particular way. And I think it's very important that even if there was another variant, even if there's another a pandemic in the future, that we rely on the common sense and the decency of ordinary people to go about their lives and to take sensible measures, rather than creating these vast reams of legislation that basically put us under house arrest.
Yeah.
That can never happen again.
And what have you made of the week's kind of doings as far as the government is concerned? You know, Sajid Javid coming out and basically saying, well, we're still going to push through the NHS vaccination mandate, and you will be fired if you haven't got two vaccinations, or possibly three, or maybe four. But apart from that, basically everything else, all bets are off. You know, it was dangerous to go to school without a mask on Monday, but today apparently it's not.
I think I'm delighted at the scrapping of Plan B. I'm very happy about that. I think it's not enough. And what I mean by that is that we now need to have a broad national discussion about what happened. And if we don't do that, if we just say, okay, that was fine, we had a weird 22 months, but now we're getting back to normal, then we'll never have the reckoning that we need to have. You know, there are 6 million people now on the NHS waiting lists because the NHS basically told people not to use its services for the best part of a year. There are still tens of thousands of children who've dropped out of the school system. We know that health problems increased over the lockdown period because people were psychologically disorientated or they simply suffered from health problems that otherwise would have been seen to by doctors. And of course, there was the massive economic impact as well. Loads of job losses, economic downturn, and all those problems associated with that. So we have to now look back at what we did, ask if it was the right thing to do, and ask who was responsible for making these severe decisions about our lives. And if we don't do that, then we'll never learn from this experience.
No, exactly right. And I mean, I wonder now whether there will be a reckoning in the cabinet as well, because, you know, regardless of what happens to Boris Johnson, we've talked about that in the first hour, you know, my belief is still that he's done, he's dusted, he should move on, and he should have the cojones to do that. But my problem with the rest of the cabinet is that none of them really have shown any sort of leadership. They've all been very, very happy to inflict more and more regulations on the rest of the public, and they've been more and more happy to put more and more taxes on us. So I would like to see a proper Conservative cabinet made up of the likes of Steve Baker, maybe even Tom Tugendhat, some of the more, you know, vocal backbenchers, you know, even Tobias Elwood, who I know has had a couple of run-ins with me because he was a bit of a Remainer. But these are all substantial figures, and they all seem to be, Graham Brady from the 1922 committee, they all seem to be people that get why they were elected, and they get what ordinary people want.
I think that's what we need. Whoever it might be, and I think some of those names you mentioned there are very good candidates for this, we need people who understand why they were elected. That's exactly right. And that's what I think Boris has lost sight of. I think he's lost sight of who put him into power and why they put him into power.
Right.
He got this huge mandate in the general election of 2019, largely from millions of working class voters in the Red Wall areas who wanted to get Brexit done, who wanted to stop all the woke nonsense, who wanted to hold back the liberal technocracy we've all lived under for the past few decades. That's what they charged him with doing. And he's not done a very good job of it.
No.
It's partly down to his own political cowardice, I think, but it's also because he's got Carrie Antoinette whispering in his ear all the time and encouraging him to embrace all sorts of mad policies.
She's been an absolute disaster. I mean, somebody tweeted me last week and said she's done more harm to the Conservative Party than Jeremy Corbyn did to Labour.
It's extraordinary. You know, it's like, you know, those millions of working class voters in the Midlands and the North, they didn't vote for this very posh woman to push through eccentric middle class policies in Downing Street. Right. It's very, very anti-democratic what she is doing and what her clique is doing. So Boris has got to listen to people like her less, and he's got to listen to ordinary people more. They've got to remember they were put into power in order to sweep aside the old kind of woke establishment right. that's been running politics for the past few years and to do something new. And they're failing to do that.
They really are. And when you get the likes of Zach Goldsmith, who's one of her big mates, you know, who's been wealthy beyond belief for the most of his life, well, all of his life, really, living now high on the hog, sitting in the House of Lords, coming out and defending Boris. This was at the beginning of this whole kind of crisis after the whole business with the MP who was charged with sleaze. And it was all kind of a bit ridiculous. You're thinking, this is a guy who was elected by the Red Wall, by people who had voted Labour all their lives, people in mining communities who understood that Boris Johnson might have gone to Eton, but he got them and he was doing what he was doing for them. And he seems to have just completely lost all of that because he's hanging around with the wrong people.
Yeah, you know, the great thing about 2019, the election in that year, was that it was a great political realignment. It was a working class revolt against the Labour Party, which I've been waiting a long time, a large part of my life, for that to happen. It was very positive. It was ordinary people saying, listen, we think this strange, foppish man from Eton and Oxford understands us better than the Labour Party, than the party that was set up supposedly to represent
true.
Our interests. And it was true. So they took a punt on Boris. They saw him as a better choice than Corbyn and probably than Starmer. And he's letting them down. Now, I think he can still pull it back. I think it will be a huge task, but he can still pull it back. But the only way he can do that is if he really turns around Downing Street, starts to speak to and understand what people want, takes Brexit more seriously, because that's not finished yet either, and starts to push back against the excesses of the chattering classes. If he doesn't do that, then he really deserves to lose.
And what do you make of those kind of diehard Boris Johnson fans who are occasionally coming and having a go at me and saying, what are you doing? Why are you attacking the only guy that got us out of Europe? Well, because sometimes people change and sometimes people use up their usefulness and sometimes it's time to get somebody new.
And I think one question is, which lots of people have asked, is who is the real Boris Johnson? You know, is it the kind of hip metropolitan mayor of London who was actually quite right on in many ways?
Yeah, he was.
And you know, felt very connected to the metropolitan elites in London. Or is it the Boris who made those appeals to the Northerners and the Midlanders of the Red Wall areas and said, I promise to represent your best interests? Who's the real Boris Johnson? My feeling is it's the London mayor of London, Boris, is the real Boris. A leopard can't really change its spots. But what it can do, it can learn, if you're in a democracy, it can learn to heed the desires and the interests of ordinary people. Mm. That's where Boris is failing.
And he's actually always been quite good at that, but he can't seemingly do that now.
He can't do that now. And if you look at some of the issues he's changed on, for example, the green issue, he used to write some really interesting columns in the old days about how climate change alarmism was out of control and the world is not coming to an end and we've got to push back against the environmentalist lobby. And now he's as green as you can get, you know, and that's no doubt down to Carrie's influence and other people too. But this is not the politics that ordinary working people are interested in. They want investment in their communities. They want public infrastructure. They want Brexit to be a reality and they want to have democratic clout. And if this government doesn't deliver those things to those people, then it's in serious trouble.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Great to talk to you, Brendan. Thank you very much indeed. Brendan O'Neill, Chief Political Writer for Spiked, of course, there, talking perfect sense.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment.
The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
John's in Southampton. Hi, John.
Morning, Mike.
Morning, sir. What can I do for you?
Well, maybe I can help put your fire out a little bit.
Go on.
As I recall, as I think it's happening now in other countries across Europe and the world, the lockdowns have been far more draconian and enforced than it is in the UK. You could say it's liberal compared to some places. And as I recall as well, that the government was accused of acting too slowly in stopping things happening when the Cheltenham Festival went ahead and then other events went ahead. And then there was uproar, and the Labour opposition sort of hammered him for that.
Yes. Now, at the beginning, I think people were willing to give the government a bit of a break. You know, they were willing to say, well, you know, people who went to Cheltenham probably shouldn't have, but that wasn't the end of the world, was it? I mean, people didn't die in mass numbers because they went to Cheltenham. A lot of people got infected.
I don't know, but I know there was quite a fuss made of it at the time. Yeah. Going back 2 years, I guess. But but the other thing is the opposition should be the target for you because Labour have been very poor.
Well, no, the opposition aren't running the country, though. The opposition aren't the people responsible for what is going on. The opposition are not the ones that have made it difficult for hospitality companies to make any money. The hospitality companies haven't made money because the government made rules which made it impossible for them to work.
Yeah, I get that. I've heard you say that sort of thing before, and there's some, you know, there's some measure of accuracy there.
Oh, really? You think? Well, no, that's because that's what happened, John. The Labour Party are of no consequence by and large. I wish they had given more opposition to the government, and then I might have supported them. But they didn't, and they were hopeless. You can't blame them for what happened in the country.
I'm not blaming them. I'm not looking to blame anyone. Looking to sort of put a different light on something.
Okay.
Which is that they're supposed to be opposite. If Chesterfield played Chelsea every week, Chelsea would beat them 5-0 every week, and soon get fed up with that, and they wouldn't improve because the opposition is so poor. And the opposition is so poor that even on Wednesday at PMQ, you get 7 chances to ask pertinent questions, and every one was on the character and personality.
All right. Well, what question would you have had him ask then? What question would you have had Keir Starmer ask Boris Johnson? Which question did he not ask that you would have had him ask?
I'd have asked him, what are we actually doing in regards to the energy crisis? What's our position on other areas of society that are sitting in bad ways, like knife crime, and what specifically is happening there? And there's a range of things, because there's lots going on that is not... I'm not saying Boris and his reputation isn't important, but it's not... All they want is his scalp.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that, but you can't really blame them. That's kind of what their job is, and then Boris acknowledges that. Boris acknowledged that was what they were doing, because he said, I realise that my honourable friend opposite has a job to try and remove me. And that was, you know, everybody understands that. But you can't blame the opposition for the government being crap.
Well, I don't agree with you, because I don't think the opposition's job is to continue then from day one try and remove the Prime Minister.
Well, no, they haven't been trying to remove... Yeah, but hang on. They haven't been trying to do that from day one, John. But when they see that he is vulnerable, when they think that they can get him, they're going to go for it, aren't they?
But yeah, perhaps. But that's what's wrong, because it's political size and everything.
Well, do you think Boris Johnson's doing a good job of being Prime Minister right now?
Well, I think he's had the worst hand ever dealt to any Prime
That's not what I asked you. Do you think he's doing a good job?
I think in the circumstances, it's reasonable.
Really?
Well, as far as I'm concerned...
So you would be happy for him to remain as Prime Minister despite the fact that he has locked us down, completely wrecked the economy, and not really even got us out of Europe properly?
I don't think you can say he locked us down.
Well, I'm afraid he's in charge, so it was his decision.
I don't know about that.
Well, I know about that. He's the Prime Minister. He made the decision.
Yeah, but if it's his decision, he takes that into account, the various advice he gets. And on one hand, there'd be experts saying you should do this, and there'd be experts saying...
Well, that's the job. That's the job. That's like you. That's like me saying, oh, listen, it's not my fault I said what I said. I was told to say it. I have to take responsibility for what I say.
It's not that. I'm trying to get you to see that there's a different way of looking at this.
You're not doing very well, I'm afraid.
Well, that's only because you're closed-minded about it.
You think I'm closed-minded, John? Really?
You decided you're right, and it doesn't matter.
Well, of course I'm right, because anybody with half a brain can see that Boris Johnson is a busted flush. He lies in order to stay where he is. He does whatever he can to stay where he is. He started talking about stopping the migrants from coming on board, so he thought that would help him. But he's not doing that, is he?
No, but can I just advise you not to go to James O'Brien?
Oh, don't be so stupid, John. Don't be an absolute and utter idiot. I am not James O'Brien. I never will be James O'Brien. James O'Brien not fit to lick my boots.
I agree with that, Bill. You just said... Anyone with
just because I don't like what Boris Johnson's doing doesn't make me an anti-Tory Labour lickspittle, does it?
But listen to what you said. You said anyone with a half a brain who thought that he was doing a reasonable job, therefore you're saying I've got half a brain.
That's not what I said.
That's an insult.
That's not what I said. I'm not even sure you've got half a brain, John, if you think he's doing a good job.
Oh, well, come on. Maybe it wasn't you who said concrete grows, so it's not.
Well, concrete does grow. Everybody knows that.
I know you've gone out of your way to prove
it does
that
grow.
You're not wrong. But the thing is, the opposition, at PMQs, the opposition just wanted a scalp, and the SNP spokesman.
You can't blame Starmer for Boris and messing it up, can you?
I'm not. I'm talking about the opposition.
Why?
So I'm not talking about
they're not Boris in charge of anything.
No, but they
well, how is it their fault then?
I'm saying they serve a function, that they're not actually...
Yeah, they're not doing their jobs either, but they're not in charge and they're not responsible for what's happened. Boris Johnson's responsible.
I said to your research person that there was three areas I wanted to mention. Would it be all right? They said, yes, go ahead.
Well, have you done that?
No, because you won't... I'm just trying to tell you my view of the SNP.
Well, you've told me your view, haven't you?
And you say you're not interested in what he says.
Well, I'm not saying he's not. I'm not interested. I've just told you that the Boris Johnson problem is caused by one person alone, and that is Boris Johnson. Nothing to do with Keir Starmer.
Right, and so in this conversation, you are just focusing purely on Boris, and I'm saying to you, I'm trying to talk about a different aspect.
Well, you've been talking for about 5 minutes, John, and you've done that, haven't you? Have you not been satisfied?
You keep stopping me when I want to say my last point.
Well, what's your last point then, John? Because we've got to go to the news.
The SNP chap got on his feet. And he said much the same as Keir Starmer.
Who
and
did?
At the end, insisted on a resignation. No questions about
what Blackford's an idiot. I don't pay any attention to what Blackford says.
Why do you keep interrupting me?
Because it's my job, John. If I didn't interrupt you, we'd be here all day.
Surely your job is to open up a discussion.
Well, aren't we having a discussion, John?
Make my last point, which you said I could.
Well, make it then. What is it?
Well, don't interrupt me.
Don't tell me what to do, John.
Okay, no, that's dangerous. Now,
very dangerous.
Yeah, the SNP chap.
Ian Blackford. Is it all right if I interrupt you to tell you his name?
Well, Blackford. Now, the thing is, when he looked... I don't know who you're talking about now. Why do you keep interrupting?
I'm not. It's Blackford's dog. Would you get on with it, John?
I'm trying to.
Well, get on with it.
Right. He looked across... towards the end of his statement, and he noticed that Boris smirked.
And he was looking at his watch, wasn't he?
And he looked at his watch and said, Christ, we've tried all this before, and I'm going to answer the same thing. And he sort of, half smirked, if you like. And then he got all indignant, the SNP bloke, and said, oh, dear. Did you see that? The Prime Minister smiled. That's how serious he's taking this. And yet...
I'm starting to wish I'd interrupted you, John. Oh, we've got to go to the news, mate. Listen, it's great talking to you, John, but, I mean, that's why I have to interrupt you, because you make a point in about 15 minutes, which could have been made in 15 seconds. But thanks for your call, and thank you very much for taking part.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Let's talk to Harry Wilkinson, head of policy at Net Zero Watch, and find out what is going on in the energy business. Harry, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. I mean, this is not a crisis that we didn't see coming. This is a crisis that we've been knowing about for quite some time. It's getting worse. People are telling me now that not only have their, in some cases, have their bills doubled, but they've sort of tripled. People are paying 120 quid instead of what they used to pay, which was closer to 40. People are paying 600 quid a month when they used to pay 200. It's extraordinary what's going on.
That's right. People have warned about this for a long time. And the government themselves actually commissioned a report on the cost of energy. It was done by a professor from Oxford called Dieter Helm. And he gave a number of very useful recommendations which would have helped deal with this problem with our electricity grid at the moment, which is that renewables are very intermittent. When the wind isn't blowing, gas is actually ramping up. So actually, wind isn't protecting us from volatile gas prices. And the government is very keen to pass this off as a crisis of international gas prices. But at times, we've actually been paying 10 times as much for our gas than they pay in the United States. So this is actually a government-made problem. Mm. We haven't, as you said, invested in fracking for natural gas, shale gas. We've refused a permit for the Jackdaw gas field. And all of these cuts are mounting up. They're restricting our supply. Across Europe, they're doing the same. The Dutch are running down their own offshore gas fields. Driven by this green ideology, we will have to rely on gas for many decades to come. However much you want to get rid of gas, gas is the main source of heating for most people in this country. It's also the most significant single power source for our electricity grid. So any change to that scenario will take a long time. So the government needs a plan, and it needs a plan quickly to get these prices down, to actually deal with the market fundamentals rather than just do sticking plaster policies to actually deal with the problem and have a long-lasting competitive energy markets.
Well, that's the thing, because handing out money, as Rishi Sunak seems to think, is now the cure-all for everything to people. 500 quid here, 1,000 quid there. If you can't pay your bills, here's some government money, which inevitably is money from you and I, is clearly a short-term embarrassment. You know, surely what they ought to be looking at is at least reducing, if not doing away with altogether, the green subsidy, which makes up for 20%, and maybe even the VAT, which makes up another 5%.
That's right. And a group of MPs who were part of the Net Zero Scrutiny Group actually called to do exactly that. That's to remove the environmental levies off of energy bills. They now make up close to 25% of electricity bills, a smaller share of heating bills. But that would provide some relief to consumers who are facing very large rises. Mm. The government also decided to allow the Rough gas storage field to close. And an academic report has found that that's actually led to more volatile prices in response to supply shocks. So that's left us, that lack of storage has left us even more vulnerable. So there's just own goal after own goal here by a government that's unfortunately prioritizing at every stage decarbonization. Its response to this crisis has sort of been to cover its eyes and say, we just need to do what we're doing, that's decarbonizing even faster, and not actually consider that we could actually reduce our emissions by having domestic gas supplies, because we wouldn't be importing it from abroad. We wouldn't be relying on regimes like Russia that we actually have many differences with. We would be keeping that job and that investment right here, actually levelling up, as the government always likes to say. Well, what does that mean? This is an example of something positive that it could mean if we keep that investment, those jobs right here in the UK.
Right. And I mean, the fracking argument has been going on for a long time. I mean, is that never going to be made successfully by somebody other than, you know, what is regarded as the sort of, you know, the bad guys who want to frack and don't care whether there's earthquakes all over Lancashire? I mean, surely the argument should now be made that we need, as Richard Tice said this morning, to generate our own energy, because then one, we've got control over it. Two, we're not going to be held to ransom by any foreign powers. And three, it's cheap.
That's right. And it's a very unbalanced debate that you hear about shale gas. Wind and solar, for example, take up much more land than in terms of per unit of energy generated than shale gas extraction would take. So this is a technology not with a big footprint on the environment. It's actually quite a small footprint. And it's one that would bring about huge economic benefits for particularly the North as well. And we have to ask ourselves, as a country, do we want to be a place which is seen by international investors as somewhere where the government, just because it doesn't like a particular industry, can arbitrarily shut it down?
Yeah.
These aren't principles by law that apply uniformly to other technologies and other forms of economic development. Why is shale gas extraction being singled out as something that can just be cancelled by the government at its whim?
Exactly right. And what is this kind of Green New Deal nonsense that we keep hearing about? You know, these jobs that are going to be created in the green industries that we have yet to set up. I mean, it seems to me the green subsidy that everybody pays on their energy bill is going to fund the lifestyles of several millionaires who've been lucky enough to form themselves into, you know, sort of green energy companies.
Well, you could justify just about any money printing big government intervention scheme by saying it would create jobs. But what we should be looking at is, are these the right jobs? Are these efficient ways to use our resources? And historically, markets have always been the best way to decide where jobs are in the economy, to create a competitive market in which people can earn a good salary and not actually just be propped up by the government, which isn't a sustainable way. We've seen industries that have become state-led in the past, and they've not been sustainable for the long term because they keep costing more and more, and eventually the government realizes it can't fund it anymore, and those jobs get lost. I'm really worried that with this green industrial revolution, we'll see all of this government money propping up industries that wouldn't otherwise exist in potentially underdeveloped parts of the country. And these people could be failed all over again by these state-led industries.
Yeah, I mean, it's beggars belief, really, that this has been allowed to happen. As you say, the energy in America is a lot cheaper. In most of Europe, it's certainly cheaper than what we pay. But how much of this do you think, Harry, is simply down to sort of recalcitrance from Downing Street and this ridiculous belief in green power?
Well, it's a global issue as well. We've seen Western governments all around the world focus on net zero commitments and really forget what they're there to do, which is to raise the living standards of their own citizens. Where is the focus on actually improving people's living standards that actually would raise environmental standards as well? We see the richest countries around the world are actually the ones where people spend the most time, effort, care, resources on protecting the environment. So this is actually a counterproductive obsession, which is going to leave people poorer and ultimately less willing and able to protect the environment.
Yeah. And I mean, as far as the future of energy goes, we've seemed to have had this kind of free for all where the big companies have done whatever they've wanted to do. They've set the prices as high as they'd like. These smaller companies have come in piggybacking on the supply, if you like. They're all going bust. I mean, something surely has to be done. And I know that the dreaded nationalisation word has been spoken about even in Tory party circles, even though apparently Keir Starmer doesn't want to nationalise anything, according to him. But they're going to have to change the way it's all done, aren't they?
That's right. It's not really true to say that we have a proper competitive free market system in energy anymore. This is a market that is almost entirely led by government decision making. And that policy to have an energy price cap, which sounded good in theory, it sounded like we were going to have energy price rises limited. But now we're looking at 50% plus increases in people's energy bills. So it hasn't worked. Many of us at the time said that it wouldn't work. And so we're seeing all the energy companies grouping at the top of what they can possibly charge. When actually, if we had proper competition, we would see a greater range of choice for consumers and actually a pressure to get bills down.
Yeah, absolutely right. And well, the price cap is a joke now, isn't it? Whenever anybody says, well, of course, thank goodness we've got a price cap, you go, really? Well, the price is going up like 300 to 400%. It's not much of a price cap.
That's right. All it does is give these companies license to charge the maximum of what they're allowed to charge. And they put increasing pressure on the government to increase that level further. And of course, government then adds further environmental levies on top of that. And the cycle continues and they push for an even higher cap. So there's no competitive process pushing bills down anymore. And we're just going to pay more and more. Mm. So the industry needs fundamental reform. Dieter Helm, who I mentioned earlier, did a cost of energy review, had many useful suggestions. Those now, I think, need to be revisited. We need to look at long-term solutions to get energy costs down, because people will really suffer. If people are being forced to choose between heating and eating, this is a huge step backwards in terms of our living standards. And it's a mark of government failure over decades.
Absolutely right. Harry, thanks very much indeed for talking to us. Harry Wilkinson, the head of policy at Net Zero Watch, talking about the dangers of allowing this energy crisis to just continue.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
See, I've already messed it up. Steffi Amphlett is here because Izzy is away. Thank you for stepping into the breach. It's very kind.
Thank you for having me.
And it's very nice to see. What you don't know is Steffi's the person who gets this all right, unlike me, who just got the introduction to the Perrier Awards completely wrong. She does all the great things that you see out there on video, masterminds it, with the help of a few other people.
Yes,
you have. I have to say, you alone have completely changed the way we look, and it's brilliant.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. You've even made me look... I'm not going to say attractive, but certainly something to look at. Let's put it that way.
Well, I don't do your hair and makeup, but I do put your in-ears for you.
You do that, yeah. Because quite... I mean, I still can't do my own ears. Take that what you will. But anyway, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Not at all.
And thanks to Izzy as well for letting me jump in and keep the seat warm.
Absolutely right. And it's a very nice purple affair you've got going on
there. Thank you, yeah.
Reminds me of my days as an altar boy. Because they used to do a lot of purple around Easter time. But, I mean, probably less said about that, the better.
Well, yeah,
yes.
Maybe.
Anyway, off you go.
Okay, so I'm going to do it really officially. So, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
Thank you.
This is where we look back at the week and choose our favourite moments. Mm. I'm even looking into the camera.
Good job.
I only know that because, obviously, I normally do the camera work, so I know where to look.
Finally, somebody's sitting there that knows where to look.
I'm probably looking to the wrong camera. So, as it's tradition, the first Perrier Award goes to you, Mike.
Thank you.
Now, we know you're a man of many talents, but we had no idea that you were able to impersonate heavy machinery. So this is the Perrier for the noise of the week.
Some kind of an angle grinder and just going, and I'm just unhook you, no? It does sound a bit like that. You know, when you're sort of at home and somebody's doing it across the street and you can't stop hearing it and it's really noisy. That's kind of what I was doing an impression of.
Yeah, it was very good.
Thank you.
Yeah, very good. And the next one, so Greg Wallace is in the next one. And he's presented thousands of TV shows. And in his time, you'd think he'd know how a camera worked. But not quite. This is a Perrier for Greg for Framing of the Week.
I paid a monthly subscription and I'm being deadly serious because I'm going to put myself as the absolute archetypal person for you. And you've disappeared now, mate. We're looking at the light.
Come back. I don't know why, but I'm in the middle of my camera, but only half your...
I don't know. Don't start me on my camera. Move to your left, pal. Move to your left a little bit. Little bit to your left. No, that's your right, isn't it? That's
the other left.
That's it.
The
stop. 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 That's it. Great. The thing is...
That's hopeless, isn't it?
The thing I don't get is that he doesn't know his left from right.
Yeah. Maybe he thought when he said move a bit to your left, he thought you meant your left.
Yeah, maybe.
People can be a bit strange like that. Yeah, that's very, very difficult to work out why he couldn't, why he just can't be on camera. It is, I mean, for those people, because we have had people say this in the past, some people aren't actually watching us. So for those who are not watching, that was Greg Wallace looking ridiculous because he wasn't actually in sight. So I know that doesn't always work if you're just listening, but what can I say?
No, it was a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next one. One presenter He's been a little bit clumsy this week. Mm. So Jeremy Kyle, our old friend Jezza, he gets two Perriers, one for this stumble.
Do you know what? I think you're absolutely spot on. I think you're spot on. Listen, Ben, I've got to stop. There's been an accident in the studio, but thank you for that. Jeremy Kyle came in. What did you do? Did you...
Oh, it's like mounting a horse. The chair leg's gone somewhere it shouldn't have.
Did it really? Not that again.
Does he mean the arm, not the leg?
Well, I think he hit his arm, didn't he? Did he hit his arm on the... He hit his leg on the arm.
Oh, he hit his leg on the arm. Yeah. Right. Not easy to remember that.
But he always makes an entrance, doesn't
he? Does.
He
does. Yeah. He does.
And the next one is for this spillage.
Current mess would... Oh, my Lord, I've poured tea everywhere. There you go. Carry on, keep talking. It's okay. Just keep talking.
You clear it up. I think Jeremy Hunt is a strong contender, but I still think it'll be Rishi Sunak will be the next leader.
You definitely
believe it or not?
Yeah.
Yes, I do, for a number of reasons.
Do you want to get out the number while I try and get tea off your trousers?
I think that's probably not a bad idea. I mean, there has been quite a dramatic spillage in the. Jeremy really has an entire mug of tea there. But no, if you do want to ring him after, presumably he cleans this up with all
or gets fired for destroying the destroying desk, which can't be too much expensive. Let's be honest. Saved it from going anywhere.
Well, which is more valuable? I mean, the theatres and the technical equipment are you. I mean, that's what I want to know.
Goes without saying, the equipment.
Very nicely full framed there as well. Probably by you, perhaps.
No, actually, that would have been the lovely Susan doing that.
Very good. Well done, Susan.
I wasn't here when that happened. Mm. So when I saw a clip about spilling tea, I thought it meant gossip.
Really?
That's like a thing, isn't it? If you spill the tea.
Oh, yes.
You're like spilling the gossip. Oh, I haven't heard
that one.
Gossip.
I haven't heard that one. I've heard the one about not giving the tea, but that's something else.
Not giving the tea?
Yeah, if the tea isn't wanted.
That's
something else. But anyway, on with the show.
And, we've got one last one. So, perhaps the most accident-prone person of the week was Labour's Jonathan Reynolds when he made this dreadful mistake whilst talking to Julia on Wednesday. This is the foot-in-the-mouth Perrier of the week.
This sort of tedious anti-vax stuff,
Jonathan Reynolds! How dare you? How dare you? I am so fed up, and so are my listeners. I'm asking you to produce the scientific basis for you claiming that you feel a policy works when it's a massive infringement of our civil liberties. And you've just basically accused me of being anti-vax. I am double vaccinated. I have always encouraged people to get the vaccine.
Oh, dear. He won't be doing that again in a hurry.
No, definitely not.
I mean, you know, everybody with half a brain, as I quite often say, knows you do not say that sort of thing to Julie Hartley Brewer.
Exactly.
If you wish to leave the room with your body intact.
I don't know what he was thinking, to be honest.
I mean, I don't. Well, he did apologise, apparently. He's very sorry.
He did, yeah.
Right, then.
Well.
Is that it?
That's it.
Brilliant. Well, Steph, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me.
Steffi Amphlett there, stepping into the breach with the Perrier Awards.
Talk radio across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.